Now, I was told that black and Asian people are not wanted as employees with the Bristol Bus Company. And I thought to myself, I may as well expose the racism, or expose the colour bar, as it was known. It took some time to take off the campaign. Support from the black community came swift. It was at a time when Nelson Mandela was fighting racism in the courts.
If it needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die.
Martin Luther King also came into my thoughts. I was keen to bring the civil rights movement to Britain and to open up the fact that racism was very prevalent in this country.
Whilst we can obtain white labour in this city, we intend to go on engaging white labour rather than coloured labour.
Well, we don't want them on here, that's the main reason. I mean, you come to look at it this way, there ain't going to be enough work for the whites, let alone the blacks.
But anyhow, the balloon had gone up, and we were now going to fight this to the end.
Yes, well, I think this is going to be all right. I'm quite confident that whoever goes on, if he finds that he's suitable, that he will demonstrate by his own ability, and he'll get on very well with the bus crews, and all should be quite all right.
We went out on the buses, giving out leaflets, telling people to get off the bus, not use it. The national press were taking a keen interest in where this story was going to go. I was libelled, said I was dishonest. I sued them for damages and received £500 and an apology. Now, it really had taken off, because unheard of for a black youth worker taking newspapers into the high courts. They had to now start taking me seriously. It was on the 29th of August. I received a telegram. It was from the Prime Minister. He said, last of the colour bar, Bristol has it. Well, I went down and told my colleagues, we've won. I have no doubt that what we did in Bristol was to impact on race relations to this very day. We've still got a long way to go. The young blacks who were born and bred here will read this history and hopefully take lessons from it and confront racism wherever it shows its ugly face.
Welcome to Our Journey, a six-part series celebrating activism, determination and hope. You just heard from one of the original activists of the Bristol bus boycott and people's champion, Paul Stevenson. In 1955 in Montgomery, Alabama, Rosa Parks was arrested for refusing to give up her seat to a white person. Nearly 10 years later, American civil rights groups were fighting for employment and racial equality. South Africa was in the grip of the apartheid movement, and Nelson Mandela had just been sentenced to life in prison. Whilst in the UK, it was legal to racially discriminate. This series tells the story of one of the UK's first ever black-led civil rights campaigns, the Bristol bus boycott, and the influences this then had on the country.
Of more than 400 happy Jamaicans. They've come to seek work in Britain and are ready and willing to do any kind of job that will help the motherland along the road to prosperity. They're all full of hope for the future, so let's make them very welcome as they begin their new life over here.
But in reality, it was quite different.
When we came here, the white people to us was very angry.
No, no, no. You don't love me, and I know now.
The feelings from my perspective was that, what the hell are you doing here? that was some of the feelings that you would feel when you walked down the street. They'd look at you as though you had two heads, you know, Medusa coming down the road.
My brothers could not walk to the city centre without being attacked. I'm sure everybody knows the signs, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish, do you know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Outside of Bristol, the Bristol bus boycott is rarely spoken about. So in this series, we will hear from a wealth of experts, historians, family members, original activists and modern day activists, and really get to grips with the story of the Bristol bus boycott and the significance, not just of the Bristol bus boycott, but of the post-war African Caribbean migrants, the settlers and pioneers that we have come to know as the Windrush generation. We begin our journey by hearing from one of the original activists, Roy Hackett, recounting in his own words how the Bristol bus boycott started.
One step beyond!
A young Jamaican called Guy Bailey, who was 18 years old at the time, and he saw in the Evening Post that they need bus conductors, and he rang up from Baptist Mills School and asked if he could come for an interview, and they said yes. However, when he went to the interviewing room, he was approached by this young lady to say, "Who are you?" He said, "I come for an interview." He said, "I'm Guy Bailey." And she said, "He's not here." And he said, "No, I am Guy Bailey." And the lady said, "I thought it was English." And Guy said, "No, I'm not English, but I speak English." She turned around to a bus and said, "Guy Bailey is here, but he's black." Guy Bailey was turned away because he was black. He could not even be interviewed. And that's when the bus crisis started. We stopped the buses into the city. I did this because I thought, if we don't do something about it now, my children, my grandchildren, and all the other children that came from a black background would have it very hard to survive. It's like going back to slavery.
Outside of Bristol, the Bristol bus boycott is rarely spoken about, and there's very little documentation. So in this episode, we explore why that is and what happened. We start with Dr. Edson Burton. Why do you think it's so important that we do tell this story?
I came to Bristol in 1994, and one of the first things that I found out about was the Bristol bus boycott. Madge Dresser was my PhD supervisor and had written a pamphlet about the bus boycott, in which she was one of the first people to interview all the major people who were involved at the time. Since then, there's been a real development of interest and research based on what was catalysed by Madge.
The point is that whilst we can obtain white labour in this city, we intend to go on engaging white labour rather than coloured labour.
Well, we don't want them on here. That's the main reason. I mean, you come to look at it this way, there ain't going to be enough work for the whites, let alone the blacks.
All this creates a hostile environment for black migrants.
When I goes to work at this place, they were looking at me like I was nobody. I would sit there, although I was doing my job properly. But still, the other workers tried to get me fired by messing up with my work, my machine. They would break the needles. They will do bad work and put it in my place. And it was so annoying.
So we know the colour bar was happening everywhere, but getting evidence of the colour bar, that was the issue. So the Bristol bus boycott basically began with a group of black Bristolians supported by Paul Stevenson. And the Bristol Bus Company was running a bar on black employment. You were allowed in certain occupations. But the whole thing was, and difficult perhaps for people to understand now, is a fear of black men being in contact with white women. So it was okay to be sort of working at the bus station with the idea that you might be customer facing or driving. Then this would expose, this fear would then come to light.
We intend to go on engaging white labour rather than coloured labour. And another thing at Bristol is that we have quite a large number of female conductresses who are very proud of their job here, and I'm afraid that if we did start engaging coloured people, while we can still get white people, that a lot of these
white females would be leaving the job to go to other work in the city.
And to help us dwell on what Edson is saying, we now hear from historian Madge Dresser.
I was quite astonished to learn that the racial discrimination in England was so legal and so accepted that you could have someone like Ian Paty, the manager of the bus company, openly state that he didn't want to have black workers on the buses. And there was also an unspoken sexual aspect, which I think people in America were more open about than they were in Britain, and that was this whole thing about the fear of interracial mixing, and which was a complete obsession in America. People were very upfront about not wanting interracial mixing. Well, here it was a kind of unspoken thing that I think was at the root of some of this racial prejudice. And once I started asking around, particularly amongst Bristol trade unionists and councillors, etc., there was this kind of defensiveness, this not wanting to say that there was a story, and that intrigued me even more. So I became like a dog with a bone. I just worried it until I got what I was looking for.
So to go back to the bus boycott, it's about ways of avoiding contact, amongst other things. So Guy Bailey basically is the stool for the bus service. And so he applies for the job. He sounds English. No one can tell his colour. Turns up and the job is gone.
We decided to set up an independent body to look into the various departments that was operating racial prejudice. It so happened that the bus company was the first one that came to our notice. We discussed that and agreed that we should get someone to go there because to prove our case, and Guy was the one who volunteered.
So I did turn up at the time for the interview, and the surprising thing was then to me was that the secretary was so shocked when I arrived and it was a black person. And the manager said, tell him that the vacancy is taken. And it was only an hour ago that they had several vacancies.
You must remember, there were no laws protecting black people against discrimination. Nothing at all. And it was at the time when Luther King was marching and students down in South Alabama were marching for freedom against discrimination and racism that I felt something had to be done in Bristol.
So that becomes the clear test that the West Indian group needed to show that the colour bar was in operation. So from that, there was a boycott of the bus company that was supported by members of the black community, also by students and other left-wing groups. And this action went on, but also created such media interest that it attracted the attention of Parliament, but also at the time, Tony Benn, being Bristol MP, got behind that campaign.
Arthur Scargill was having the miners' strike up north, and we were having the strike down here. And at one stage, they said, Arthur Scargill, Roy Hackett, and Tony Benn is the three worst person in England.
And as, of course, it became more visible, it was something which was discussed in Parliament, and it was becoming then a case of national fallout. The Bristol Bus Company was pressured into taking it seriously and to finding a resolution, and then the bus boycott had basically achieved its aims, and the colour bar was lifted.
In 1965, Harold Wilson stood up in Parliament.
The battle against racialism here in Britain.
And he said, as from today, any person discriminate against another because of politics, religion, colour, creed, or disability, you have committed a crime punishable 5 months in prison or 5,000 or both. And I cried. I said, thank heavens for this. I said, we won. I never taught it in school that this happened here. And I said, why are they ashamed of what they've done to us? I talked to the primary schools. I always tell them that we had to do that to bring you up and never forget your roots. Trying is a great thing. And if you even fail one, try another time or trying to improve what you fail on, you know, and try again. Really, because young people today, they are tomorrow's people. And we must try our best to make them be a good tomorrow's people.
The
The campaign's success did not mean that racial tensions, institutional racism ended on the buses or elsewhere in Bristol. Evidence suggests that the company may even have had a secret quota system still in operation. But as we heard, the Bristol bus boycott did help to pave the way for the UK's crucial Race Relations Acts of 1965 and 1968. The boycott has helped change Bristol and Britain forever. It shows us the difference ordinary people can make when they come together to take action against social injustice. Join us for the next episode as we continue to explore the significance of the Bristol bus boycott and the impact the Windrush generation had on a nation that was recovering from war. Our Journey was a Sound Women Southwest Network production, produced and presented by Miranda Ray, and the sound editor was Keziah Wenham-Kenyon.